This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. Thanks for joining me this Wednesday. We'll begin this week with the case of the missing heiress from Sherlock Holmes, his story from October 5th, 1947. That's followed by Nick Carter, Master Detective, and the case of the unwanted wife, his story from October 10th, 1948.
Makers of Clipper Craft Clothes for Men and 924 leading retail stores from coast to coast present the world's most famous detective, Sherlock Holmes. And so once again we find ourselves in Dr. Watson's cheerful firelit study. Outside, a cutting October wind scurries the brittle leaves. But inside, all snug and cozy, with his feet on the well-polished fender, sits our favorite host and storyteller.
Thank you, Mr. Harris. Thank you.
And which of Holmes' fabulous adventures are we to have tonight, sir?
But tonight, it's the case of the missing heiress. A Canadian heiress, to be exact. Pert and pretty as a picture. And with a mind of her own. I can never forget her father's expression when he discovered the compromising situation she... There I go, getting ahead of myself as usual. Well, now, don't look so worried, Mr. Harris. I hadn't forgotten. This is where we say a few words on behalf of a very generous sponsor.
Thank you, Dr. Watson. And our sponsor really is generous, in more ways than one. Take the amazing values he gives, for instance. Clipper Craft clothes are just about as fine as can be made, and so modestly priced. I dare say even a Sherlock Holmes would be stumped at how it's done, but it's elementary, Dr. Watson.
And now, Mr. Harris, to our story. The case of the missing heiress. Put your boots on the fender and make yourself comfortable.
A perfect combination. A crackling fire to warm one's feet and a hair-raising adventure to chill one's spine.
Sounds rather like one of those confounded hot and cold shower baths that are the curse of this modern age. Now, in the good old Baker Street days, when one made one's daily ablutions in a tin tub that was filled from a pair of steaming jugs...
One got in and out as fast as possible to prevent freezing to death, eh, Dr. Watson?
Only in the winter time, Mr. Harris, only in the winter. I remember one bright July afternoon in the year... Let me see. Well, never mind, it was before you were out of your cradle. I was splashing about in my morning tub.
I thought you said it was afternoon.
When one shared lodgings and adventures with the great Sherlock Holmes, one frequently took one's morning tub in the afternoon or evening. Now, where was I?
Splashing around in your morning tub in mid-afternoon.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. As a matter of accuracy, I was just removing the soap from back of the ears and giving a not-inspired rendition of a current comic opera hit when Holmes burst in rather unceremoniously. Wandering minstrel, I, a thing of shreds and patches.
For heaven's sake, Watson, stop that caterwauling and throw on a dressing gown. We're about to have a caller, and I'm sure it means another case.
And why should that interrupt my bath? You're quite capable of handling the first stages of a case by yourself, Holmes.
Not when it concerns a lady in hysterics and a court train. You're much better than I at managing female agitation.
Holmes, what are you raving about?
An elegant carriage has just galloped up to our curbstone. And without waiting for the footman to alight from the box and assist her, a middle-aged creature in full court regalia, complete to the feathers in her hair, bursts out into the street and is even now pulling our front doorbell out by the roots.
Oh, Lord, well...
Aha, Mrs. Hudson's let her in. She's coming up the stairs. Now, will you come out and protect me?
Certainly not.
Very well, then. I shall be obliged to usher her in here.
Oh, no, great Scott, wait. I'm coming. Good Lord, look at me. A fine way to greet a lady.
Don't worry. Unless I'm greatly mistaken, she's too upset to notice. Here, tie the cord around your middle.
Oh, yes, yes, of course.
And you put your slippers on the wrong feet.
Oh, confound it.
Come in.
Mr. Holmes. Oh, Mr. Holmes, thank heavens I find you at home.
Why, Lady Maynard.
Oh, Dr. Watson, delighted to see you. Could you give me a glass of sherry? Oh, this is terrible. I'm ruined. And the poor girl, Oh, Mr. Holmes, you must find her. You must.
Of course, Lady Maynooth, but first perhaps you'd better tell us the name of this damsel in distress and inform us just what difficulty she seems to be in.
Oh, that's just it. I haven't the remotest idea. I don't mean I don't know her name. It's Elizabeth. Elizabeth Bascom.
Not Miss Lizzie Bascom, the only child of old Hellfire Bascom, the Canadian Copper King.
That's right, Dr. Watson.
Oh, quite the belle of the season, I gather.
Yes, Elizabeth has certainly been popular. Not that it's made the slightest impression on her.
Yes, perhaps that explains her popularity.
That and her father's millions. But why are you so concerned about Miss Elizabeth Bascom, Lady Maynooth?
It's been my responsibility to sponsor the young lady through her first London season, to see that she makes the proper social connections and, well, her father is bound and determined that she shall marry into the nobility.
I had no idea that George Bascom, more often referred to as Hellfire, was one of your acquaintances, Lady Maynooth.
To be quite frank, Mr. Holmes, I've never set eyes on Elizabeth's father, but a mutual friend. Knowing that he was anxious to have her received in the best circles, and also knowing that my own financial position has not been too secure lately, well, I was, shall we say, persuaded to take Elizabeth under my wing.
I hope you made a profitable arrangement.
I did, Mr. Holmes, but I've earned it, every penny.
You mean the young lady is uncouth? In spite of her good looks?
Oh, no, Dr. Watson. The truth forces me to admit that Elizabeth is really quite presentable and even lovable when not crossed.
But when she is crossed, she takes after her father?
Exactly. She insists on going for solitary walks, completely unchaperoned. She strikes up an acquaintance with the most unlikely people.
Democratic, eh, Holmes?
It might be considered democratic in an ordinary female. But where a young woman of Miss Bascom's wealth is concerned, it's rather dangerous.
Oh, how true. We've been receiving, well, not exactly threats, but certainly crank letters, ever since it became known that Elizabeth had come to stay with me. But she absolutely refuses to pay heed to her own danger. Says she's been handling situations of that sort all her life, and she refuses to become perturbed about it at this late date. And now it's happened.
What has?
Oh, well, I finally persuaded her to take an interest in young Lord Weaverbrook. A very suitable match in every way. In fact, her father is arriving on the next boat in order to announce the engagement.
Well, surely there's nothing to be upset about.
Oh, yes, but what is he going to do when he finds his daughter has been abducted?
Abducted? You mean forcibly?
This note was pinned to the carriage seat when I returned and found Elizabeth gone.
I gather from your costume, Lady Maynooth, that you were on your way to Buckingham Palace?
Yes, Mr. Holmes. After considerable maneuvering, I had arranged to have Miss Bascom received at court. It took a bit of doing, and I'll admit I expected trouble with Elizabeth. However, she fell in with the plan with quite a sure alacrity, even standing patiently for endless fittings of her train and taking lessons in how to make a court bow.
Yes, I've often wondered how one managed it.
Don't interrupt, Watson. Go on, Lady Maynooth. Today, I take it, was the day.
Yes, and more perfect weather one couldn't have wished for. And I must say, Elizabeth seemed to be in high spirits. We were well prepared with the usual hamper of wine and sandwiches and cake. You know that interminable wait in St. James's Park.
I've thought often that the sight of the ladies in their full regalia on the way to a court function is one of the great sights of London.
Elizabeth seemed to share your opinion, Dr. Watson. At any rate, she seemed in unusually high spirits as the other carriages crowded around us. It's even more exciting than a regatta. All the street musicians and the crowds passing on the sidewalks as if it were a parade. All waving and cheering and calling to us.
Oh, there she goes. That's Lizzie Bascom.
Get out, my dear. One doesn't wave at them. It's not done.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Now, cover your flowers with a napkin, my dear. The sun is really becoming rather oppressive.
If you ask me, it's darned hot.
Now, Elizabeth, you mustn't smile back. It only encourages them.
But why shouldn't I smile? I'm so happy.
Just control yourself another moment, dear, and we'll be inside the gate where the crowd can't follow us.
Oh, then we're nearly there.
Heavens, no. It takes ages, even after you're in the courtyard. Yes. Here we go. That's better. Now, let's see what's in our luncheon hamper. I'll admit I'm half-starved.
Oh, no. No, let's wait. I'm still so excited. Oh, Lady Maynooth, look! Who's that handsome man walking among the carriages and sticking his head into some of them?
Oh, dear, I wish he wouldn't. His
mother would be so put out if she knew he were out here. They will do it, all the boys. They say it's much more fun than it is inside.
They may know if he's coming this way. Oh, he's going to stop.
Well, so this is the carriage that has been causing all the commotion. No wonder. Hello there.
Hello yourself.
Well, that's refreshing. So this is the beautiful Lizzie who has set the town on its ears. Oh, Lady Maynooth, I didn't notice you at first. You wouldn't by any chance have some smelling salts? The Dowager Duchess of Kiel seemed rather wonky as I passed to Barouche. I wonder if you'd come and take a look at her.
Why, of course, certainly. Let's see, where did I put the smelling salts?
In your reticule, Lady Maynooth.
Oh, yes, yes, of course. I'll be right back. Oh, and Elizabeth.
Yes, Lady Maynooth?
If that gentleman should return, be sure you address him as Your Highness.
And that, Mr. Holmes, was the last I saw of Elizabeth Bascom. She was abducted. Abducted in broad daylight. Right there in the courtyard of Buckingham Palace.
You don't think it was done by a prince of the blood royal? They've been known to pull some rather spectacular pranks.
No member of the House of Hanover, Dr. Watson, would write this note. It was pinned to the cushions of the seat directly behind the box.
May I see Lady Maynooth?
Of course, Mr. Holmes.
Yes, the whole affair was undoubtedly planned in advance.
Well, what makes you say that, Holmes?
The words are printed in ink, large, bold lettering, and the paper's been folded. Furthermore, there's a rather carefully executed dusky palm print in the lower left-hand corner.
But what is the message? What does the note say?
The words of communication of this sort are always the least enlightening part of the epistle, Watson. But just to satisfy your curiosity, I'll read them to you.
Dashed right of you.
We have kidnapped Lizzie. If you know what's good for her, don't tell the cops. Signed, The Black Hand.
Oh, a band of American cutthroats. The words kidnapped and cops are dead giveaway. I've heard of these Black Hand gangs. Poor Lizzie. Men like that are desperate characters.
Oh, dear.
We can only hope her father will arrive in time to pay any ransom demands.
Oh, Mr. Holmes!
Yes, we may be dealing with a band of cutthroats and desperados, but let's not jump to any conclusions, Watson, until we've examined the scene of the crime.
What do you mean you expect to find clues in all that turmoil in the courtyard of Buckingham Palace?
No, Watson, the scene of the crime is much closer than that. It is, in fact, drawn up to our curb. I allude, of course, to Lady Maynooth's carriage.
Oh, I see what you mean. I hadn't thought of that. Well, come along. What are we waiting for?
For you to go and finish dressing, Watson.
Whoa, Jonathan. Easy now, Penelope.
Handsome horses you have, Lady Maynooth.
Thank you. This is Horace, Mr. Holmes. Horace has been our footman for over 50 years.
I am man and boy. And that's the truth.
Record to be proud of, Horace, in these troubled times.
Eh?
He's a little deaf, Mr. Holmes. It is age.
I said you've a fine record, Horace.
Eh, I have that.
If you'll open the door, please, Horace. Mr. Holmes is a detective. He'd like to inspect the carriage.
I know who Mr. Holmes is, Mum. Everybody knows Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
Horace, when did you first become aware that Miss Bascom was not in the carriage?
What? When her ladyship come back and found your note.
You didn't see or hear anything unusual before that?
I did not. Henry, he's our coachman, you know, gone off to help Lord Brunsey's man, who was having trouble with his horses. And I had me hands full holding our horses, but I handled them.
Third fellow, Horace. I mean, Horace.
Besides which, I'm a bit deaf. Not that you could notice, but it keeps me from hearing things.
I'm afraid Horace is but a broken reed in this affair.
What's that?
I said thank you, Horace. Well, let's have a look inside the carriage. Give me my magnifying glass, Watson.
Yes.
Yes, it's interesting. Very interesting.
What have you found, Holmes? Bloodstains?
On the contrary, there's not the slightest indication of a struggle. Either Miss Bascom left the carriage of her own free will, or she was lured out of it by someone she considered a friend. Very significant. Very.
Significant, Holmes, but hardly helpful.
Yes, here is her parasol, neatly furled. Surely, if she'd been attacked, she'd have attempted to use it as a weapon. And the luncheon hamper, neatly placed in the corner. Open up the lid, Watson.
Very well. Hello.
What's up?
The sleeping was empty, not even a crumb left.
Why, the blackguards! They not only abducted my ward, they stole my lunch as well. What if the pound cake hadn't even been cut into?
The scoundrels. Well, Holmes, I'm afraid we've really drawn a blank. No clues, no clues at all.
Not so fast, Watson. Here is a long thread of heavy silk. Lady Maynooth, has Miss Lizzie by any chance a garment with a blue fringe in her wardrobe?
Yes, of course. The pelerine that goes over a puce walking suit. But what has that to do with the case? She was wearing full court regalia when she was abducted.
That's what makes it so preposterous, really. You know, you couldn't possibly kidnap a lady in a court costume.
Hello, here's something in the side pocket of the hamper.
Why, that's Elizabeth Spadica, her guidebook. She was always sneaking off by herself with that under her arm. From the number of times it happened, she must have visited all the sights of London.
Not all, Lady Maynooth. I fancy Miss Elizabeth rather specialized in the British Museum.
How do you arrive at that conclusion?
The rest of the volume was rather stiff, showing very few of the pages have been read. But notice how readily the book opens at the portion describing the British Museum. And here, the paragraphs describing the famous Elgin Marbles. That page is decidedly dog-eared.
The Elgin Marbles?
Yes.
Good heavens, I'd no idea Elizabeth was a connoisseur of art.
I fancy Miss Elizabeth is a connoisseur of many things of which you had no idea, Lady Maynooth.
Oh, dear, what do we do now? I suppose we'd better consult Scotland Yard.
I rather fancy that a certain Mr. Percy Smithers will prove more helpful in this matter. I suggest that Watson and I pay him a visit.
Percy Smithers? Who in thunder is he?
The famous archaeologist and authority on Greek and Roman relics. He is also curator of the Elgin Marbles. Here we are, Watson. The British Museum. Imposing if somewhat moth-eaten old mausoleum, eh, Juan?
No, you needn't point it out to me as if I'd never laid eyes on it before. I had an uncle whose idea of entertaining his various visiting nephews was to trail them through the British Museum.
And you, of course, have never been guilty of escorting your juvenile relatives through its echoing halls.
Well, that is, one must keep up the traditions, you know.
Well, never mind. Open the door.
I can't. It's stuck. Well, never mind. Here comes an attendant. I say, guard. The entrance seems to be a bit balky. We can't get it open, don't you know?
And why would you? It's been locked up for the night. Closing time was 20 minutes ago.
Well, then I guess we won't get to see the marbles today, Holmes.
I'm not particularly interested in the marbles, Watson. Guard, can you tell me if Mr. Smithers, curator Percy Smithers, is still on the premises?
Oh, no, sir. He's gone home.
You saw him leave?
Well, he always leaves 5 minutes before closing time.
I don't suppose you can give us his home address.
Well, I'd do better than that, sir. There it be, over there. First house across the quadrangle.
The one with the bay window?
That's right.
Thank you. Come along, Watson.
Do you know this fellow Smithers, Holmes?
Only slightly, Watson. I've met him at the Diogenes Club from time to time when I've gone there to see my brother Mycroft. Like all the rest of the members, he's what you might call taciturn.
Oh, the grumpy old professor type, I take it.
Professorial and grumpy, I grant you, but he's certainly not old. In fact, Mr. Percy Smithers looks not unlike the Greek statues he's such an authority on. Only with more clothing, of course.
Oh, yes, yes, I can remember that there were many elderly ladies who got up a petition demanding draperies be put on the marbles when they first went on exhibition. I, of course, consider them perfect as they are.
Then you've seen the Elgin Marbles?
Many times.
You recall the statue of Perseus?
Perfectly.
Could you describe his attitude?
I can do better than that. I can duplicate it. He's standing like this.
Not bad, except the positions of the left and right arm should be reversed.
Well, has your friend took a fit, sir?
Certainly not. I was just explaining something. And stop following us.
I wasn't following, sir. I was just going home to me supper.
Bumpkin.
You recall the face, Watson, of the Perseus statue, I mean?
Oh, naturally.
How would you describe the nose?
Well, that is Grecian, of course.
Wrong again, Watson. That particular statue has no nose at all. It's probably been missing for centuries. Oh, but here we are at Mr. Smithers' door. Ring the bell, Watson. That's a good fellow.
Who's giving orders? Well, I still don't understand what information you expect to gather from the curator of the British Museum about a missing Canadian heiress.
You never know, Watson. You never know.
Yes, what do you want?
We've come to see Mr. Smithers, Mr. Percy Smithers.
Well, you can't see him.
I'm sorry to disturb him if he's having his supper, but this matter is rather urgent.
You can't see him because he's not come home. And as for his supper, it's been burnt to a crisp waiting for him. And a fine trout it was, too, that he ordered special.
What a pity. Perhaps you could tell me if a young lady in a blue and puce walking suit has called on Mr. Smithers lately.
Certainly not. Mr. Smithers is a respectable man and a womanator besides.
Once again we draw a blank. This case seems to lead nowhere but down blind alleys.
Oh, on the contrary, Watson. The fact that Mr. Smithers did not come home for his supper is decidedly revealing.
You don't think he's been forcibly kidnapped, too, by the same outfit that abducted Miss Bascom?
No, I don't think there are any indications of kidnapping. At least I doubt that any force was used.
Of course. How stupid I've been. Mr. Smithers and Miss Bascom have eloped.
Watson, the incurable romanticist.
Well...
Now, Watson... A woman hater, myself excepted, of course, might conceivably change his mind. But no ardent lover would order trout, a single trout, for supper on the day on which he expected to run off with his inamorata.
Well, where does that all that get us?
Whatever detained Percival Smithers was unexpected, entirely unexpected. Come, let's go home before our supper's been burned to a crisp.
Oh, Holmes, how can you think of food when you haven't rescued Miss Bascom from heaven knows only what danger?
Whatever danger Miss Lizzie's in, I rather imagine she enjoys. Yes, there's nothing further we can do until tomorrow at 8:30.
Why 8:30?
That is the time they unbar the entrance to the British Museum. Yes, we shall be waiting at 8:22.
Age 25, Holmes. Another 5 minutes and we shall know if your guess is right.
I never guess, Watson.
I say, Holmes, isn't that Lady Maynooth's carriage coming down the street at a full gallop?
Yes, Mrs. Hudson must have told her she'd find us here. Yes, here she comes like a ship under full sail.
I say, who's the red-faced little man with her?
I rather imagine Papa Bascom has arrived.
Dead, let the dead, bless the dead, burn the... So you're Sherlock Holmes. Why in blazes haven't you found my daughter?
I was right, Watson. It is Hellfire Bascom. How do you do, sir? Good morning, Lady Maynooth.
Oh, Mr. Holmes, the most horrible news. The most horrible, horrible news.
They haven't found a body.
No, but first of all, when I returned home last evening, my butler informed me that all the sandwiches, the wine and the cake had been found in the jardiniere of my best aspidistra. The cook is so insulted she threatens to leave.
Yes, I rather suspected that hamper held something more interesting than food when I found that blue thread.
And that's not all. Tell him the worst.
Well, this morning, before I'd even had time to have my morning tea, Lord Brunt's man returned Elizabeth's court gown and feathers. They've been found in his carriage.
Why, the scoundrel.
Oh, he wasn't in it at the time. He was still at the reception when his coachman discovered the dress.
But this makes matters even worse. The poor girl was abducted in her petticoats.
Yes, the poor, poor girl. Her reputation will be ruined.
Ah, blast her reputation, ma'am. She'll catch her death of cold.
Calm yourself, Mr. Bascom. I think I may be able to return your daughter with both her health and her reputation moderately intact. Yes, they're opening the doors now. If you will follow me.
What? Into the British Museum?
Calm yourself, Mr. Bascom. A little culture is quite harmless, I assure you. Ah, our friend the guard. I believe you're about to unlock the hall to the Elgin Marbles. Mind if we watch?
No, not if it'll give you any amusement. I've been unlocking it 8 years now, and it's never been what you might call fascinating.
Today, I think you may be in for a surprise.
Well, seeing's believing.
Well, it's about time. Where the devil were you last night? Didn't you hear me shouting?
Mr. Smithers, you've been locked in with them marble women all night.
And one that wasn't marble.
Lizzie! What in thunder are you doing here?
Yes, and wearing the puce and blue walking suit.
Papa! Well, what do you know? Papa, I want you to meet Mr. Percy Smithers, the famous scientist, and your future son-in-law.
Scientist! I wouldn't let you marry a scientist if he were the last man on earth.
But, Papa, we've been locked up together all night. Think of my reputation.
Well, you scoundrel. You planned all this.
You lured my innocent little girl into this trap.
Really, my dear.
Papa, don't be silly. I was the one that trapped Percy. I planned it all. I picked yesterday because all the crowds would be at Buckingham Palace and the museum would be empty.
So you threw the food into the jardiniere, packed your walking suit in the food hamper, changed in Lord Brunt's carriage, and headed for the British Museum.
Yes. The hard part was fascinating Percy so he wouldn't notice it was closing time. As a matter of fact, it wasn't as hard as I'd expected. You see, I suspected Percy, liked me, but I couldn't get him to propose.
But she's too confounded rich.
Look here, my boy. You'll marry her now if I have to get out my old shotgun.
Well, of course, I rather wanted to anyway, but only on one condition.
What's that? There, blast it.
She has to promise to live within my income.
Darling!
That was all she wanted to know.
And did Lizzie live within her husband's income, Dr. Watson?
Well, all this. At least if Papa gave her presents from time to time, Percy never knew about it.
How did Elizabeth and her archaeologist get along?
Oh, splendidly. You see, Hellfire Bascom backed several expeditions for the British Museum, and curiously enough, Percival Smithers generally headed them. He did some splendid work, too. So when he was finally knighted and Lizzie became Lady Elizabeth, everyone said she'd more than earned the title.
And now, Dr. Watson, how about a hint about next week's hair-raiser?
Oh, next week's is a hair-raiser, Mr. Harris, in more ways than one. It concerns a gentleman who had an unusually florid, I might say a crimson head of hair, and how he was hired for a decidedly curious job on that account.
Oh, of course. It's the famous adventure of the Red-Headed League.
How did you guess, Mr. Harris? How did you ever guess?
The makers of Clipper Craft Clothes and 924 leading retail stores from coast to coast have brought you another in the new series of broadcasts featuring the world's most famous detective, Sherlock Holmes. Sherlock Holmes is produced and directed by Basil Lochran, and our stories are written by Edith Meiser, with special music by Albert Berman. Holmes is played by John Stanley, Dr. Watson by Alfred Shirley. If you don't know your Clippercraft dealer, write Clippercraft, 200 Fifth Avenue, New York City. Be sure to listen next week to Sherlock Holmes in The Adventure of the Red-Headed League. If you wish to attend the Sherlock Holmes broadcast in New York, see your local Clippercraft dealer, and he'll tell you how to obtain tickets. Cy Harris speaking for Clippercraft Clothes. This is the
new post-war Old Dutch cleanser, famous for chasing dirt, presents Nick Carter, famous for chasing crime. Every week at this time, two great names are joined as new post-war Old Dutch cleanser brings you one of the most resourceful and daring characters in all detective fiction, Nick Carter, Master Detective.
Well, Nick, did you get that description of the Travis girl?
Yes, Patsy. A flashy type in her late 20s. Medium height, slender, snub nose, thin lips, perfect teeth.
Nick, then you were right. They are the same person. You've found the answer.
Now, wait till you hear the rest. The Travis girl is a natural blonde.
A natural? But the nurse is a bleach blonde. Those curls are positively brassy.
Yes, and that means that the whole case is blown up in our faces.
Now, the case of the unwanted wife. Today's adventure starring Lon Clark as Nick Carter, brought to you by new post-war Old Dutch cleanser. Nick and Patsy are returning to the office after an uptown luncheon engagement when a traffic light halts Nick's car in front of the city's most exclusive hotel, the Van Arnum.
That's the Van Arnum where Mac McGowan works now, isn't it, Nick?
Yeah, Mac's been house detective there ever since he retired from the force.
Well, what in the world? Nick, look, she's coming this way.
Hmm? Who, Patsy?
That woman in the blue coat. She just ran out of the hotel as if someone were chasing her.
Say, somebody is chasing her.
You're right. It's a man and a nurse, isn't it?
Yeah, it looks that way.
Why, they're coming right toward us. Please, oh, please drive on and hurry.
Now, wait a minute. Well, what's the idea?
Turn that loose in there, Harry. Head her off on the other side.
Oh, don't let them take me back. Hurry,
the lobby door's back there, quick.
Yes, yes.
Hey, Patsy, what in the name of heaven are you
doing?
Well,
you're not going to let them get her until you find out what's going on, are you?
Laura, open that door.
I won't. I'll die before I'll let you take me back.
No, driver. Unlock that car door.
Just a minute. What's this all about?
That lady's my wife.
She's ill. She's out of her mind.
That's a lie.
Come on, open the door.
Don't you do it, Nick.
You keep out of this, you nosy little cluck.
What
are you...
driver, you open that door or I'll knock a couple of your teeth out.
I think I'd like to see you try that.
Mr. Barton, call the police.
Yes, do. I'll tell them how you and my husband are trying to put me in an asylum so that you can get my money.
Shut your mouth, Laura. You don't know what you're saying.
Hey, what's going on here? Oh, Mr. Barton.
Oh, hello, Max.
Why, hello, Patsy. And Nick.
Mr. McGowan, these people are trying to kidnap my patient.
You mean Nick and Patsy are...
Hey, look, Mac, we're holding up traffic. I better pull over to the curb.
Don't let them start that car, McGowan.
Now, take it easy, Mr. Barton. I know these folks, and they're all right. Go ahead, Nick.
Oh, you've got to believe me. I'm no more insane than you are. My husband and that woman are holding me prisoner.
Now, don't get excited, Mr. Barton.
Oh, get in touch with John Ramsey in San Francisco. He's my lawyer. He'll tell you.
All right, McGowan, get my wife out of that car.
I better get her out, Nick. The poor lady's a little,
That's
know.
Not true. I'm perfectly sane. I am.
If my patient isn't taken back and put to bed immediately, I refuse to answer for the consequences.
No.
Take my word for it, Nick. Everything's on the level.
Oh,
okay,
please.
Mac, if you say so. Unlock the door, Pat.
Oh, no, please. Don't let them get me again.
Well, Mrs. Barton, there's nothing else I can do.
You're working with them. You're against me, too.
Come on, Laura, we'll go back.
No, I won't go back. I won't.
Oh, yes, you will.
No.
Take her other arm, Mary.
No, please. Somebody help me.
Believe me, Patsy, I felt just as sorry for the poor woman as you did.
Then why didn't you do something?
Well, what could I do? There was nothing suspicious.
Nothing suspicious? Did you ever in your life see a real nurse wearing as much makeup as that peroxide Goldilocks was spread on an inch thick?
So what? There's no law against that. And it doesn't prove she's not a real nurse.
Just the same, I'd like to get my hands in those blondine curls of hers. Calling me a nosy little cluck, will she?
I don't blame you for being sore, Patsy, but still that's no reason to say she's not a real nurse. I didn't care much for Barton, either.
But did you notice that when he got excited, he called her Mary? Are things usually that chummy between a nurse and her employer?
Oh, now, Patsy, that's a strictly personal matter.
Yeah, I'll bet it is. I wouldn't be surprised if it were so personal that railroading the wife into an asylum would be very convenient.
That may very well be, but there isn't a scrap of evidence to back it up.
Well, that's what Mrs. Barton said they were doing, and I believe her. Oh, she was so helpless, so frightened.
Well, in her state of mind, it's natural to imagine things.
What do we know about her state of mind except what Barton and the nurse told us?
We know that Max says they're telling the truth. And that's enough for me.
Well, it's not enough for me. Oh, Nick, if there were only something we could do.
Oh, Patsy, the chances are 1 in 1,000 that Mrs. Barton's story is true.
Yeah, but, Nick, that one chance, won't you do something about it?
Well, it's probably a waste of time, but if it'll make you happy...
What? Well, Nick, what are you stopping here for in front of a telegraph office?
I'm going to play that 1,000-to-1 shot.
Oh, Nick, you're an angel.
I'll send a wire to John Ramsey, Mrs. Barton's lawyer in San Francisco. Nick Carter speaking. Yes?
This is John Ramsey, Mrs. Barton's attorney.
Oh, yes.
Now, what's all this about her losing her mind?
Well, that 2-page telegram I sent you contained all the facts, Mr. Ramsey.
But it's preposterous. I just got in touch with Mrs. Barton's physician, and he tells me there wasn't a thing wrong with her when she left here 10 days ago.
Well, tell me, do you happen to know if there's ever been any insanity in her family?
Well, yes, her father had some trouble of that kind, and so did a distant relative. But she's never shown the least sign of it.
I see.
Now, Carter, I've heard of your reputation. Could I get you to investigate this business for me? I don't like the looks of it.
Hey, wait a minute. You mean that perhaps her husband is trying to railroad her into an asylum?
I wouldn't put it past him. Barton's a pretty shady character.
Uh-huh. Does he have any money?
Oh, not a cent. That's why he married Mrs. Barton. She's a wealthy woman, and he knows that if she goes through with the divorce...
Oh, she was planning to divorce him, huh?
Yes. She told me to have the papers ready for her as soon as she returned from the East. They've been separated for months.
Well, that's funny. They arrived here together.
Well, they certainly didn't leave San Francisco together. She should have got rid of him long ago.
Is there any particular reason outside of his being what you call a shady character?
Plenty of reasons. Mostly other women. Younger women.
Uh-huh.
But how about it? Will you take the case?
Well, I'm afraid I'll have to, Mr. Ramsey. My secretary will never forgive me if I don't.
Good. Now, don't worry about money. Spend anything within reason, but make absolutely certain that this insanity thing isn't a frame-up.
I'll do all I can, Mr. Ramsey, but I'll need some help from your end, and I'll need it quick.
Well, just tell me what you want me to do.
Get the best private detective in San Francisco. Have him send me all the facts he can dig up on the Barton.
He'll be on the job within an hour.
Good. And tell him I also want a complete description of Barton's latest girlfriend, especially if she turns out to be a peroxide blonde named Mary. You say they checked into the hotel 5 days ago, Mac?
Yeah, all three of them. Mrs. Barton was in a coma at the time.
A coma? I'll bet she was drugged. I still say they're keeping her prisoner until they can railroad her into an asylum.
Well, that may be what they're trying to do, Patsy, but it isn't easy to put a perfectly sane person in an asylum.
No, I'll say it isn't. You've got to have a doctor certify that they're really mentally ill.
Mac, do you know whether any doctor has visited her here at the hotel?
Well, sure, a doctor, Leonard Jarvis.
Why, Nick, you know Dr. Jarvis. You recovered his wife's pearls that time, remember?
Yes, yes, and Dr. Jarvis is one of the best psychiatrists in the city. It's a cinch he wouldn't be mixed up in anything illegal.
Well, how do they happen to pick him, Mac, or don't you know?
Oh, sure I do. Barton phoned the desk and asked for a psychiatrist. So the desk clerk called the Medical Association and got Dr. Jarvis's name. That was a couple of days after they came.
Oh, well, I suppose there couldn't be anything suspicious if they let someone else pick the doctor.
No, I don't think they could be, Patsy. If Jarvis says Mrs. Barton is mentally ill, that settles it.
Nick, let's go see Dr. Jarvis.
But why?
Maybe he noticed something when he examined her. Maybe he... Oh, I don't know, but let's go see him anyway.
All right, Patsy. If I don't, I may have to take you to see him.
Mrs. Laura Barton... Now, let me see.
She's staying at the Van Arnum, Dr. Jarvis.
Yes, she's about 40 years old. Dark brown hair, thick glasses, very prominent front teeth.
Oh, yes, yes, of course. An extreme manic depressive, Carter. Her husband should really put an institution for her own safety.
You couldn't possibly be mistaken, could you, Doctor?
My dear young lady, Mrs. Barton definitely exhibited every symptom of psychopathic melancholia. Why, even during my examination, she attempted to leap from the window.
Was she in good health physically?
Oh, yes, yes, indeed. Except for a rather puzzling lack of coordination.
What? But, Dr. Jarvis, what do you mean?
Well, Miss Byrne, the inability to judge distance. For instance, when she reached for a cigarette, her hand missed the package by several inches. That condition is not ordinarily a symptom of her particular disorder.
Tell me, Dr. Jarvis, could the symptoms you observed have been caused by a drug?
Oh, absolutely not. I'll stake my professional reputation on that.
But her personal physician in San Francisco said Mrs. Barton was perfectly all right before this trip east.
Well, psychiatry is a specialized field, Miss Bowen. A general practitioner might easily overlook certain warning signals.
Yeah, but the condition could have arisen without warning, couldn't it?
Oh, I hardly think that's possible.
But suppose it did. Then perhaps it could go away just as suddenly.
Well, I suppose there might be exceptions.
Dr. Jarvis.
Yes?
Just on the off chance that there might have been some change since you saw her, could I persuade you to go back to the hotel with me and make another examination?
Well, it seems useless, Carter. There's seldom any change.
I realize that, but I promised to investigate every possibility in this case. And I'd consider it a personal favor if you take another look at it.
Please, Dr. Jarvis.
Well, when you put it that way, I won't refuse.
Good.
I haven't forgotten your fine work in recovering Ethel's pearls.
Then you will go over there with us?
Yes, I'll go with you. But I don't expect to find any reason why I should change my opinion.
Yes? Oh, what are you doing here?
We came with Dr. Jarvis, Mr. Barton.
I wanted to see your wife again, Mr. Barton, to verify my earlier diagnosis. I hope you don't object.
Well, I...
There's no reason why you should object, is there?
Of course not. Come in, please.
Thank you, Mr. Barton.
Your wife's room is over here.
Just a moment, Doctor. The nurse is giving Mrs. Barton a massage. If you'll be seated, I'll ask her to get the patient ready.
Oh, very well.
Have you seen the nurse yet, Dr. Jarvis?
No, I haven't seen Miss Emerson.
No, but, what? But... No, go away, please, Roger.
But Laura, dear, Dr. Jarvis is here.
I won't see them. I won't.
You see, a persecution complex.
Come near me.
Laura, they only want it.
No, I won't see them.
Laura, come back here.
No, they're
fine. Great Scott.
Nick, what happened?
I don't know, but I'm going to find out. Come on.
You're responsible for this, Carter. If it hadn't been for your meddling...
Responsible for what? Where's Mrs. Barton?
It wasn't my fault. I tried to hold her back, but
where's Mrs. Barton?
There. Oh, Nick, look at the window.
She got away from us. She jumped out.
Horrified, Nick and Patsy gaze at the broken window through which Mrs. Barton fell 21 stories to her death. We'll see what happens next in just a moment. Now, back to The Case of the Unwanted Wife. Today's adventure with Nick Carter, brought to you by new post-war Old Dutch cleanser. It is 10 minutes later. Miss Emerson, the nurse, has gone to notify the police. Nick and Patsy are examining the window through which Mrs. Barton fell 21 stories to her death. And Dr. Jarvis is speaking to the dead woman's husband.
I warned you that something like this might occur, Mr. Barton. Your wife should have been put in the hospital.
I know, Doctor. But she was so frightened of strangers.
Yes. I heard her begging you to send me away.
Oh, not you. It was Carter and that girl. In her poor, deluded mind, Laura pictured them as enemies.
But
when
surely...
she got in their car, they acted as if they were going to help her. Then they had to admit their mistake. Laura thought it was deliberate. She was getting better until that happened.
Well, I'm sure Mr. Carter didn't do anything.
Oh, what difference does it make now? She's dead and... we can't bring her back.
Well, her money's still here, Mr. Barton, so don't feel too bad.
Why, Miss Bowen?
How dare you say a thing like that?
Perhaps because Patsy feels as I do, Mr. Barton. That your wife's death coming at this particular time looks very suspicious.
I don't know what you're talking about.
She was going to divorce you, wasn't she?
No. We straightened everything out on the train coming east. We were completely reconciled.
That's your story. Your wife said you kidnapped her and were trying to railroad her into an asylum in order to get her money.
Oh, delusions, Mr. Carter. Just the delusions of a sick mind.
That may be, Barton. But if Laura Barton had lived 5 minutes longer, she might have proved her statement was the truth.
Are you accusing me of...
of murder, Mr. Barton? Yes, I think maybe I shall.
There are laws about slander in this country, Carter. I'm going to drag you into court and make you prove that statement.
And that's just where I intend to prove it, Barton. In court.
Nick, I hope you got plenty of proof to back up what you said to Barton. He's really boiling.
I haven't any proof, Mike.
What?
Nothing I can take into court.
Well, then why in the world?
You can learn a lot from the way a man reacts to an accusation, Patsy.
Okay, what did you learn from Barton?
Well, Mac, if you'd seen his face, you'd know. He's guilty. I'll bet my last dollar on it.
Maybe you already have. He can sue you for everything you got.
But you must have had something to go on, Nick.
I have. It's not much, but it's enough to convince me.
Oh, what is it?
On the window frame through which Mrs. Barton fell, I found scratches. Deep scratches toward the outside, as if Mrs. Barton had been desperately trying to hold herself back.
But, Nick, you...
I also found this piece of broken fingernail wedged in a crack in the window frame at one of the scratches.
Well, then you think they pushed her out of the window?
I'm sure of it.
Oh, but what if it turns out to be Barton's fingernail or the nurse's?
Now, I took a look at Barton's hands and also at the nurse's. Her nails are perfect. So are his. Not a broken one among them.
Maybe they did push her out, Nick, but you'll need a lot more than a fingernail to prove it.
Yes, and besides, Dr. Jarvis will swear in court that she'd already tried to jump out of the window when he was there earlier.
Yes, I know.
Son, I'm afraid you're licked.
Don't be too sure, Mac. What I do next depends on what we hear from San Francisco.
Nick, was that airmail special delivery from San Francisco?
Yes, Patsy. There's a report I've been waiting for.
Well,
not much help. Unless you're interested in knowing that Mrs. Barton graduated from Stanford in 1927, married Barton 3 years ago, belongs to the better clubs and so on.
Oh, what's this newspaper clipping? The one with her picture?
Oh, something about her activities in the Anti-Tobacco League.
Oh, I see.
Well, isn't there anything about Barton's latest girlfriend, the one who caused his wife to decide on a divorce?
Hmm? Oh, yes. Seems the girl's name is Mary Travis.
Mary? Well, that's what Barton called the nurse.
I know. And Mary Travis left San Francisco the same day Barton and his wife did.
But, Nick, that's just what we were hoping to hear. Is there a picture of the Travis girl?
No, but the investigator says she's a very flashy type. In her late 20s, medium height, slender, snub nose, thin lips, perfect teeth, a natural blonde.
Oh, natural blonde, my eye. If that girl's hair wasn't dyed, I don't know dyed hair when I see it.
That's just the point, Betsy. The description fits Miss Emerson perfectly, except for her hair, which has very obviously been dyed. Even I can see that.
And take it from me, it was no touch-up job either.
Which proves that Mary Emerson, the nurse, is not Barton's San Francisco girlfriend.
Yeah, I'm afraid you're right. Mary Emerson's hair was brown before she dyed it.
What did you say?
I said I could still see traces of brown at the roots of her hair. Must have dyed it blonde in a hurry.
Brown?
Huh?
That's the answer, Patsy. It's got to be.
Well, Dick, what are you talking about?
Oh, what a fool I've been. Mrs. Barton was a member of the Anti-Tobacco League, and I didn't even...
You didn't what?
Give me that newspaper clipping, Patsy,
yeah.
And get your hat.
Uh-huh.
We're going to see Dr. Jarvis again.
Carter, I've already told you that Mrs. Barton was a manic depressive. She exhibited every symptom.
I know, Doctor, but is it usual for every symptom to be present?
Well, not always, but hers was an extreme case.
Almost as if she had learned those symptoms from a book and pretended to be out of her mind. Isn't that right?
Well, yes, but... What? You're not saying that Mrs. Barton wanted me to think her insane?
Here, take a look at this newspaper clipping. Just the picture. I'm going to hold my hand over the printing under it.
Why, that's... Oh, no, I'm wrong. For a moment, I thought it was Mrs. Barton.
It is Mrs. Barton.
No, it isn't, Carter. This woman has the same outstanding features.
You mean the prominent front teeth, the thick glasses, and dark hair?
Yes, but it's definitely not Mrs. Barton.
All right. Now read what it says under the picture.
Mrs. Laura Barton, prominent San Francisco clubwoman who lost... But, Carter, that is not the woman I examined. I'll swear to it.
Dr. Jarvis? That statement is going to convict a murderer.
Nick, don't you think we should have brought the police with us?
Mac's gone for them, Patsy, and I didn't want to wait. Hello, Miss Travis. Is Mr. Barton here?
No, he isn't, and he wouldn't see you. What'd you call me?
Mind if we come inside and wait?
What do you mean, pushing your way in here? And my name's Emerson.
Maybe she's forgotten who she really is, Nick. She's been using so many names lately. Mary Travis. Mary Emerson. Laura Barton.
Are you crazy? You met Mrs. Barton. You scared her into jumping out of that window.
Oh, no. We frightened you and Mr. Barton into pushing her out before the doctor could see that it was you and not Mrs. Barton he examined and pronounced insane.
That would have spoiled everything, wouldn't it, Miss Travis?
You talk like a fool. The doctor saw me here.
Not very clearly. You kept out of his sight as much as possible.
Mrs. Barton and I were as different as night and day.
And that's what you counted on. When Dr. Jarvis came here the first time, you wiped off all that makeup, wore Mrs. Barton's thick glasses, probably even had protruding false teeth made to fit over your own.
You're a liar. You're a dirty, snooping liar.
You also dyed your own blonde hair brown to match hers, and then dyed it blonde again after the doctor left.
A very poor job, too, Miss Travis. What's the matter? Were you afraid to have it done by a professional beauty operator?
Get out of here. Get out or I'll call the cops.
That's a fine bluff, Miss Travis, but Nick has already called the police. They'll be here any minute.
No wonder Dr. Jarvis didn't recognize you the way you look now. And after the fall, Mrs. Barton's body was too badly mutilated for him to notice it was not the woman he examined. You planned on that all along, didn't you?
You can't prove that. You can't prove a word of it.
When the doctor testifies that you and Barton tricked him into certifying Mrs. Barton as suicidally insane, I think a jury will consider that proof enough.
You may be right, Carter.
Roger, do you hear what they said? They're on to everything.
Barton, you and this woman are under arrest for the murder of your wife.
Nick,
we're under arrest. You forget I'm the one who's holding the gun, Mr. Carter.
Roger, they sent for the cops. We gotta get out of here.
We're going, Mary. But first we'll make sure our friends here don't follow us.
Well, then tie them up or something, but hurry.
There's not enough time for that. Turn around, Miss Bowen. You too, Carter.
All right, Barton. What's next?
Put your hands against the wall where I can watch them.
Roger. You're not going
What's the difference if we're caught? It means the chair anyway.
Well, you're going to To shoot us in the back?
Correct, Miss Bourne. And you first.
Mr. Barton.
Right now.
As fire jets from the muzzle of Roger Barton's revolver, Patsy screams and falls. We'll see what happens next in just a moment. Now for the conclusion of The Case of the Unwanted Wife. Today's adventure with Nick Carter, brought to you by new post-war Old Dutch cleanser. In suite 2104 of the Van Arnam Hotel, Nick and Patsy stand with their faces to the wall as Roger Barton, a revolver in his hand, says...
You first, Miss Bourne.
Mr. Barton, now... Roger, what happened to the light?
I put them out, Miss Travis. You missed me, Barton. Shooting at a voice in the dark is tricky business.
No, I ought.
So I didn't. Now, the flash of your gun served as a target. Patsy.
I'm all right, except for some bruises. What happened?
When I pushed the light button, I had to shove you out of the way before Barton could fire. There wasn't time to be gentle.
Well, I guess I fell over a telephone table or something. I wish you'd broken your neck. Thanks, Goldilocks. Cut the lights, Nick?
Yeah. Better pick up Barton's revolver.
Okay, Nick.
Nick, are you and Patsy all right? Couldn't be better, Mac. Come on in. Police with you?
They're coming up in the elevator now, and the paddy wagon's right outside the front door.
Just what we want. All right, come along, folks. Your carriage waiting.
Nick, tell me, what did the fact that Mrs. Barton belonged to the anti-tobacco leave have to do with solving the case?
Well, Patsy, don't you remember that Dr. Jarvis said that the woman he examined reached for a cigarette?
Well, why, yes. He said something about her hand missing the package by several inches.
Yeah. Well, Mrs. Barton would never have reached for a cigarette, Patsy.
Well, of course not. Not if she belonged to the anti-tobacco league.
That's right. So it had to be Mary.
Mm-hmm.
And she missed the package of cigarettes when she reached for them because she was wearing Mrs. Barton's thick glasses. Glasses that she could hardly see through.
But why did it have to be Mary? They could have hired somebody to impersonate Mrs. Barton who really looked like her.
Sure, but letting some outsider in on their plot would have been too risky. And besides, what possible reason could there be to suspect that a natural platinum blonde would suddenly turn into a peroxide blonde with much darker hair, except that
for some reason she dyed her hair dark and then bleached it again.
And very inexpertly, too.
Yeah. Poor Mrs. Barton. Maybe all the trouble did affect her mind toward the end.
Well?
Remember how she screamed that she didn't want to see us when we came to help her?
Yeah. Mary Travis explained that in her confession.
Yeah?
Mrs. Barton didn't know it was us. Barton told her that the men had come to take her to an asylum.
What? So that was it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Nick, the old dime novels had a phrase that described Mary Travis perfectly.
They did? Well, what is it?
She was a double-dyed deceiver.
I'd say she was.
What about next week's adventure, Nick?
Well, it's a story of Johnny Wade, Mike, a boy I had a lot of faith in, even though he'd been in prison.
Johnny was one of our best friends, Mike, so when he was released from the state penitentiary, Nick and I were right there to meet him.
See, he was only a youngster, and I wanted to help him get a fresh start.
Yeah, but Johnny was too ambitious.
But that's a good thing in a boy, isn't it?
Not in this case, Mike. You see, Johnny's only ambition was to kill.
What do you call this adventure, Nick?
I call it The Case of the Double Frame.
Nick Carter, Master Detective, is presented each week at this time by the Cudahy-Cack Packing Company and is produced and directed by Jock McGregor, copyrighted by Street & Smith Publications, Incorporated. Charlotte Manson is featured as Patsy. Today's script was written by Jim Parsons. Original music is played by Henry Silverne. This program is fictional, and any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, is purely coincidental. This is Michael Fitzmaurice saying, when minutes count, use new post-war Old Dutch cleanser. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
That does it for this episode of Case Closed. I hope you enjoyed the stories this week. You can find a lot more from Sherlock Holmes, more from Nick Carter, more from Case Closed, and everything else Relic Radio at the website relicradio.com. Find a link there to our Shoutcast stream as well and our donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Thanks, as always, to those who have, and thanks for joining me today. Talk again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.